Thanks, David, and it's a great pleasure to be here. And again, let me also extend my thanks to Mahmoud Saka for coming to this meeting. You know, the last 2.5 years or so have had governments around the world struggling with a pandemic. The big thing that's going to occupy governments for the next 20, 30, 40 years is, of course, climate and the response to that. And therefore, having a very strong science base to this is going to be critical. Oops, I've changed the slide without meaning to. Is going to be incredibly important for ensuring that there is policy which is evidence-based. And if we think about it, science identified the problem. Science is clearly crucial for tracking where we are, and it's going to be crucial for solutions as well. There are many experts here who are going to talk more about that than I can, but I wanted to reflect a little bit on COP26 and think about what the implications are for COP27 and going forward. The first thing is, and this may come as a surprise to you, it was the first ever COP with a day dedicated to science. Sort of surprising, actually. And it was the first time that in a COP meeting, it was decided actually having a chief scientific advisor would be quite helpful just to make sure the science got into the right place. The science day turned out to be unbelievably well attended. I think it was actually the most attended day of the entire COP meeting. And there were many outcomes of COP26 which were important. I mean, a simple one in a way was the consensus amongst participants from different backgrounds, policy, science, other areas, that there's no doubt that the climate is indeed changing, and there's no doubt that human activities have contributed to that change. And of course, the reason that was so possible to get to that place is because of the work of many scientists across the world and the IPCC. It was the first COP in which the text of the output, including a commitment to reduce reliance on fossil fuels. 23 countries agreed to phase out and not build new fossil fuel plants and not to invest in them. And that includes Indonesia, South Korea, Poland, Vietnam, and Chile. Mission innovation, the approach to try and get innovations that will make a difference to clean technologies and actually solving the problems, and the Glasgow breakthrough goals really press the notion of supporting innovation. Importantly, there was a clear link at the meeting between nature and climate and biodiversity. 130 countries agreed to halt and indeed reverse forest loss and land degradation by 2030. It wasn't just a meeting about mitigation, it also focused on adaptation. And the Adaptation Research Alliance was born at the meeting with 100 organizations over 35 nations. And where science advisors from countries, and I think in the end we ended up with something like 46 different countries, science advisors coming together to produce a letter to leaders, a short letter, indicating what we thought the key issues were that leaders needed to concentrate on. And I think that, again, is something that hopefully will go forward in future COP meetings in order to keep the science very present and very focused in a way that leaders can build on it. So there were some good outcomes of COP26, but there's a big but. And the big but is the scale of the challenge is extraordinary, whether that's in mitigation or adaptation. And the scale of the challenge is, of course, influenced by many external factors, including at the moment a war in Ukraine, which is influencing all sorts of aspects of how one thinks about responding to this. So there's no doubt that this is a challenge which is going to occupy governments right way around the world. And it's not just that the challenge is big, but there are needs that we've still got to meet. There is still a need for more research. And the slide up here is from a recent paper in Science on tipping points. There are many tipping points potentially around the world, West Antarctic ice sheet, glacier destruction, sea level rises. We know that there are things going on which can have a big impact everywhere. We know that it's going to be beneficial to get better resolution, modeling to be able to understand what happens better over time and at much finer granularity of scale. So research and funding of research remains crucial. The second big challenge is indeed innovation. And whilst there are many things that you can see and touch and feel as innovation now, scaling from I can do it through to I can apply it to population level work across the country is a huge, huge technical, operational, scientific challenge. Big challenge around the green premium, as Bill Gates puts it. In other words, the cost of innovation being much more than the cost of not using innovation, that difference he calls the green premium, and getting that down in some way to a level in which this becomes practical for people is again a scientific, technical, engineering challenge. And there are specific areas that we still don't have adequate solutions to. Massive energy storage. How are we going to do that? Carbon capture, we know we're going to need to do that in any model, but we don't know yet exactly how we're going to achieve that at scale. Concrete, shipping, and of course, adaptation. What are the innovations that we need to adapt to what is inevitably going to be a changing situation? And the third area where we don't yet understand, I think, how this will drive things, and it's very difficult to understand, is behavior. And David has already mentioned behavior. Depending on things like how quickly we choose to take up electric vehicles, or how we change our own behaviors for what we eat, or how we fly, or how we choose to move around within countries, how we choose to adopt things and whether we can afford to adopt them is a massive part of defining how big ultimately the challenges we face. And so understanding, not to say what's the prescription to change behavior, because that is an incredibly difficult thing to do, but just to understand what are the things that are likely to produce a big swing factor on the scale of what it is that we need to tackle is going to be an important part of the next few years. So my final point is, we've had lots of aspiration. We've had lots of very good statements about ambition. But actually, we need plans, and we need delivery plans, and we need to get on with doing it. And that's really difficult. And of course, is very difficult politically as well for people to buy into. But if you work back, if I just take the example of innovation, and you work back from 2050, sounds like quite a long way off. But the scaling challenge means you bring it back and you realize if you can't actually begin to at least see part of the innovation today, you're probably not going to have it at scale in 2050. Doesn't mean you shouldn't keep researching to find more, but we need to get on with actually using some of the things we've got and getting them up to scale. And that means that this decade, in fact, these next 5 years, is really, really important in terms of innovation coming to implementation and to scale. We need to do that, detailed plans. And this is a science and engineering point. I mean, a lot of this is engineering. How do you get to the plan for a roadmap to deliver against this? We need both push and pull mechanisms, financial and others, to make sure that innovation can come through. And this is where science again becomes really important, we need to be able to monitor the progress against this. And we need to think of this as a systems problem. What we tend to want to do is pick off each bit and say, I can solve electric vehicles, I can solve housing, insulation or whatever. But the whole thing actually has to go together, and land use is a critical example of where if you don't look at this through a system, you end up making a decision which has all sorts of unintended consequences. So systems monitoring, including, of course, understanding supply chains, which are going to be critical. And we need to continue to research new areas, because it doesn't stop in 2050. The problem continues, and we need to make sure we've got the right answers for what comes next. So I'm very pleased, actually, that we've got somebody of the calibre of Mahmoud Saka leading the science on COP27, because COP27 needs to be a very scientific meeting as we enter this next phase. Thank you.